It's time for Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.
Hi, folks. It's your old buddy, Luke Clayton. Thank you very much for joining me. You know, about 2 years ago, the management at KETR saw fit to give us, we folks that like to hunt and fish, our 15-minute outdoor show, and since that time, we have been making the most of it, I'll guarantee you. For instance, this morning, we have Larry Wysoon, Mr. Whitetail set up. He's going to drop by and visit with us and talk deer hunting. He's just been on a bear hunt up in Canada. I think everybody enjoys listening to Larry's tales. The first portion of our show is underwritten by Young's Wilderness Camp up on Lake of the Woods in Ontario, Canada. The website for Young's Wilderness Camp is youngswildernesscamp.com, and the toll-free number up there is 866-894-0674. Folks, as promised, Larry Wysoon is standing by. He's our guest today. We're going to talk what else but deer hunting. Larry, thank you for being with us, buddy.
Hey, it is my pleasure. I mean, we're coming out what was an absolutely fabulous spring, kind of a late good great winter, too, in terms of rainfall. And of course, now it's kind of drying up a little bit.
We're in need of a little rain. We had a few sprinkles lately, but the early forbs and all the, you know, the little weeds and the plants that grew early on, that should be, you were telling me off the air, that's going to be a big boon for antler development. And all that took place this year a little bit earlier than normal, back in March in a lot of instances, you know. So antler development, you were thinking, predicting, might be really, really good.
I really am expecting some out of this world antlers this year, scattered pretty much all over Texas and even some of the adjoining states. The rainfall came just perfectly. We went through a horrible drought last year. That meant that a lot of mature bucks made it through the fall because they'd broken their antlers really bad. And they came out of the rut in really good shape with the rainfall that we've had. And those little green forbs or weeds or whatever you want to call them, and then the fresh growth from the brush that we've had because the rainfall is just very highly nutritious. And March, as you mentioned, to me, March is one of those critical months when it comes to antler development. So really, we're sitting in good shape, but as we head into the summer now, we've got, won't be long, in some areas, of course, we already have fawns on the ground, and down here where I live in South Texas, our fawns generally start hitting about the middle of July, but these little fawns are off to a great start, but we want to keep them that way, to make sure that the mama has produced some plenty of milk, and that she can teach that youngster where to eat and what to eat and all those kind of things. And I know there are a lot of folks out there that are using supplemental feed. And right now, as we go into these drier times, as we head into the summer, it's a great opportunity if you're not supplementally feeding to do so. But, you know, for those of us that are on already supplementally feeding deer, you want to keep them on that same diet throughout the rest of the year if you can.
You bet. Folks, our guest is Larry Wysoon. Now, I know that many, many of you have followed Larry's career through the year. He's a well-known outdoors writer, TV show host, and a biologist. You know, Larry, that's one thing that that really, I think, has helped you tremendously in the hunting world is your knowledge of deer, of wildlife. And that's, you know, that goes back to your days at A&M, doesn't it?
It really did. We started doing a lot of the research that people are using these days to try to produce better deer way back when.
Yeah.
And so I've been kind of, you know, involved in a lot of the antler development studies that have occurred over the years, particularly in terms of nutrition to a lesser extent, the genetic side of things, but particularly in terms of management. We've had the opportunity to set up management programs all over Texas in years past and then follow them through to see what kind of results we got. And you're right. All that has helped a lot as far as I'm concerned to have a little bit better understanding, not only of the animals, but of the habitat as well, but also the people that you deal with when it comes to trying to grow bigger deer, whether it's the hunter or the landowner.
That's true. It's an interesting topic, and the deer hunting I'm talking about. Folks, I'm going to tell a little quick one on Larry. Larry, you know, I think to be good at anything, you've got to have an innate desire to learn and always be inquisitive. Well, folks, I was hunting with Larry back in the winter. It was December, January. And Larry was on a part of a ranch, the Clay Hill Ranch, where we were hunting, and we linked back up there mid-morning. Well, Larry had this a leg bone that he'd found. And you know, you came out and said it really, you know, it had perked your curiosity big time, because you were naming folks. Larry was naming parts of a leg bone that I'd heard of, but to me, a leg bone is a leg bone. But this one's missing this, or it doesn't have that. And I started looking at it, and I'm telling you what, Larry, to be quite frank with you, I was wondering if that leg bone didn't come from an alien or something. It was a weird shaped bone. But I think when all was said and done, you'd pass judgment on that it was probably maybe an emu, you know, foot, a leg bone. It's the only thing that made any sense to you, wasn't it?
It did, and the closest thing that I could find or come even close to was the fact that it was probably an emu. But even that emu, if it was one, the leg bone that we found or that I found, is even a little bit different from all the emu leg bones that I've been able to look at since then. So I have no real idea for sure what it was, but I know a whole lot of things it wasn't at this point still.
Well, I'm going to bet that when you got back, you did a little bit more research on that. You probably so that there was parts of that bone that it was a leg of something, but the parts of that thing you told me you just did not match up to the bird life, right?
They didn't. Like I said, I'm still not convinced that I know what it is, but the closest thing I've been able to come up with that is somewhat resembles is the leg bone of an emu, which of course is a fair-sized bird. And of course, with two, we talked to the landowner there and said, "You ever see any of these on anywhere in this part of the country?" And the answer was no. So,
yeah.
And then you have to realize where we found this thing was way off in the middle of nowhere. I mean, literally between a long distance between any pasture roads or trails or anything, right on the edge of a big old kind of a marshy area. So uh-huh. That kind of added to the mystery a little bit as well.
That's the thing about when you spend time in the outdoors, Larry, if you keep your eyes open and your ears open, I mean, you can it's fascinating some things you can run into that you can find, isn't it?
It is. Now, to me, that's all a big part of hunting. You know, we found this thing, and then all the comments that we could come up with from different people in camp and different people we talked to, I mean, it made it kind of interesting, by golly.
It did. Larry, let's go back on your career a little bit. I know, like I'd mentioned earlier, a lot of our listeners have followed you from the get-go. But, you know, you started hunting back when you was a kid. And then I'm sure you're probably a pretty seasoned hunter even before your college days. But you were there at a time in history for study of white-tailed deer in particular, and other animals too, but especially white-tailed deer. There was really very little factual information known about deer back at that time from a biological standpoint, right?
I think a lot of people thought they knew something about deer back then, and all of a sudden we realized how little we really did know. And yes, timing is so very important, you know. Deer hunting and management, kind of as we know about it today, of course, started in Texas, started really back in about the middle to early 1970s, and some of the early work we did had to do with trying to determine the nutritional status of white-tailed deer in different parts of the world and trying to figure out just exactly what it was that deer needed to grow big bodies and be healthy and grow big antlers. And along the way, some of the landowners started seeing a decline, and next thing you know, Al Brothers and Murphy Ray were starting to put together book called Producing Quality Whitetail, and two, about the same time, really even a little bit earlier, Jerry Smith, who was a photographer from Alice, Texas, and John Wooders, an old dear friend of mine and a lot of people read his stuff years ago that wrote for Peterson's Hunting. For the first time ever, Jerry started photographing mature bucks. John started writing about mature bucks, and from that, we've seen this huge movement that we've had in the last many years, and since then, about white-tailed deer, and particularly the way we know it these days. And I was very fortunate to be around. We did some of that early research and developed some of the early management techniques. And it's been very interesting and refreshing and all those kind of things to kind of watch things grow over the years. But it's also interesting to note that, hey, just about the time you think you know something, the white-tailed deer and the species as it is in the habitat is going to teach you a few new lessons. So you never really learn all of it. You just kind of keep an open mind and try to learn as much more as you can about where we're going to head in the future, you know, based upon where you came from.
Well, that's exactly true, Larry. You know, I wonder, I'd say in the last 10 years, I've watched the fact that me, I'm around a lot of hunters and a lot of hunting camps as a writer, and I get around pretty much. And I've noticed 10 years ago, if someone mentioned a 150 class buck that was killed, you know, I'm just talking a decade ago. I mean, there was plenty of them killed. I'm not trying to say that, but you know, it was a oh wow a moment back then. You know, wow, a 150. You know, well now I have noticed that a 150. A lot of newcomers to deer hunting. I'm talking about guys that's maybe been hunting deer. Maybe they're in their 20s or you know, younger people. A 150. I hear a lot. Well, we're going, you know, maybe we can get a manage. I've even heard the term management 150s. And I thought, what a change. Now, what I'm wondering is, with the genetics and the way that that deer breeders have learned to produce big deer, I'm wondering, now, some of these deer in high fences, and some are not in high fences. I mean, just it's not all of these big deer are grown in are propagated in big in high fences, but give it another 5 or 6 or 10 or 12 years, what's going to happen, Larry? A lot of these bucks, they're just bigger deer now, bigger body, bigger antlers. They're not, you know, they're bound to interbreed, and I'm wondering what the average Texas deer herd would look like in another 10 or 12 years, free ranging. I'm talking about.
It's going to get very interesting. I mean, more and more people, and we're starting to see a trend, too, of more emphasis being put on those places that don't have high fences. But to me, you needed the high fences. You needed mm-hmm. to have the breeding programs to be able to see what deer were really capable of. But I'll tell you something. Even as a whole across the North American continent, the white-tailed deer has increased in antler size and body size considerably. That has been the cause of several reasons, because we've had very conducive weather to where we haven't had serious die-offs. We've had sufficient food in terms of crops and those kind of things being planted. We've had overstory removed so that there's lots of little stuff going on the ground. And at the same time, because of the emphasis that haven't been put on antlers, there's a lot of people out there that are now giving those deer the opportunity to get into those 5-year-old plus age classes. And that in itself has made a tremendous amount of difference. And we know now, too, my gosh, that it's, you know, with some of the deer breeding programs, you look at some of the deer that are being produced, and a lot of people think it's, oh, my gosh, they're doing some kind of steroids. We did research many years ago, and I can tell you that if you start applying steroids to deer and antler development, the antler development goes down. And so it's basically just a matter of pretty much genetics, nutrition, and age, just as it's always been. So it's going to be very interesting. You're right. I think as a whole, we'll continue to see the average size of both the antlers and, of course, the body size as well, to a point, increase throughout Texas. Now, we're limited somewhat in Texas. Our deer can only be a certain size big because they just can't take the heat that we have. Now, where that size level is, we're still not real sure, but I mean, we're in for some interesting times, some great times, and I keep coming back to the statement people talk about, the golden age of white-tailed deer. You know, some people think it's in the past, but I'm telling you what, we're living in the golden age of white-tailed deer hunting.
Larry, there is no question about that. A kid growing up in East Texas like I was back in the 60s, you know, 1960, I was 10 years old, and there were deer up in northeast Texas, Red River County, where I was raised. We'd see one on our little place occasionally, a big one. But, you know, by and large, it was into the 70s before they got popular. Larry, they're telling me we're out of time. I really appreciate you being with us, and can you get back again pretty soon and talk some more deer hunting with us?
I would dearly love to. No pun intended there. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Larry. Folks, that was our buddy Larry Wysoon, better known as Mr. Whitetail. I really appreciate Larry taking the time to visit with us, and he is a storehouse of knowledge on everything pertaining to whitetail deer hunting. You know, the second half of our show was underwritten by Young's Wilderness Camp up on Lake of the Woods in Ontario, Canada. The website there is youngswildernesscamp.com. The phone number up there is 866-894-0674. Again, it's 866-894-0674. We are out of time, folks. Make sure and remember KETR.org. You can click on local programs and in outdoors, and you can listen to the archives of all of our past shows.
Luke Clayton has been addicted to everything outdoors since his childhood. He grew up hunting and fishing in rural Northeast Texas. Luke pens a weekly newspaper column that appears in over 50 newspapers. For videos, archived newspaper articles, and more information, visit catfishradio.com. This has been Outdoors with Luke Clayton on your station, 88.9 KETR.